story this morning. Story about power. Story about how I came to understand a little bit about power, and it is the story of why I became a Unitarian Universalist minister. It also happened, like Bruce's story, in 1968. Happened from meeting a man who taught me about power, taught me about privilege, taught me about sacrifice, taught me about the depth and the range of feelings and the freedom of how we can attain that as people when we sometimes feel helpless and powerless and trapped in our lives. Pretty powerful influence for a man that I knew for less than 5 minutes. On a trip, vacation, to Fisherman's Wharf that I went with my family, I sat there on the opening of Fisherman's Wharf where there were the vendors on one side and the traffic moving past them, and it was a cold, foggy day with the seals barking. But all I could notice was this one man who was hunched over in a corner, wrinkled and sad and downcast and groveling and shaking. And he had his tin cup and he shook it, and it felt like he was grabbing me by the lapels and shaking me. And he scanned around everything around him until he saw me looking at him, and he locked eyes on me like a tractor beam, and I could not look away, even though I felt tremendously uncomfortable, because it felt to me, with his little tin cup, he could see the $1.65 that I had in my pocket, my vacation money, right, which I had saved for a long time, and it felt to me like he was imploring me, help, what can you do? And I was paralyzed when all of a sudden a woman walked between us and dropped change in his cup. And his eyes went from me to following the woman as she walked out of sight and then looking at how much his life had just changed. And he looked down and he poured the coins into his hand, and then he counted each coin by putting his finger on it until he got to the last coin, and he was so excited. I have rarely seen this much joy come out of somebody's face when he closed his fist with his money, got up from where he was sitting, shuffled over a few steps to one of the vendors who was a shrimp vendor, and he held out his hand in front of the shrimp vendor, to which the shrimp vendor said, "What do you want?" And with a shaking hand, he held out the change, and he said, "So, what do you want?" And undeterred, the old man looked down to the little cartons of shrimp that were in the glass window underneath, and a smile came up that was just joy unbridled. Something that he had been looking forward to for so long had just become possible. And the vendor, getting an understanding of what he was saying, grabbed one of the cartons of shrimp, took a ladle of red sauce, poured it on the top, pushed it out in front of the man, took the change. There was no change. There was no exchange like that. And the old man didn't care. He just took the carton of shrimp in both hands like he had just received the best present in the world. And his face was just glowing, and he took two steps back with this cradled in front of him like a baby, and he started to turn around when he caught the shoulder of a passing tourist, and the carton fell on the ground, and all the shrimp became trampled instantly, and so was the look on his face. And he was empty. He was paralyzed. And he turned around to look at the shrimp vendor, who just turned away very quickly. The man who had bumped him didn't even turn around to look to see what happened. And his shoulders went up, his arms went out, and he looked around until, again, he turned around and saw me watching him. And his eyes locked in on me, as if to say, "You saw that, right? You saw that. I'm not invisible. I am really somebody. And he was pulling me in. And I did not know what to do and felt powerless to really help him when I felt the hand on my shoulder from my mom who pulled me back away to our life. That man, though I knew him less than 5 minutes in my life, has been on my mind most every day. He sits in front of me when I go to rallies. He sits around me when I come to church. He sits beside me when I write sermons, all to try and keep me accountable. And it's not a sad thing. Over the span of 43 years, he has taught me this, which is actually a very joyful thing, that I am every one of the people in that story. I am the man who is shivering. I am the woman who walks by and puts change in the cup. I am the man who comes by and bumps him and spills his shrimp. I am the shrimp vendor who yells at him. And I am the little boy who is mesmerized and wants so desperately to help but doesn't always know how. And I am the woman who pulls that boy back to safety. We are all those people, and we are all looking to have that range of feelings, but especially to make that sense of joy possible for everyone. And that's the story for today. Somebody who is with us today, Martin Trimble. Martin Trimble is the lead organizer for Voice. Voice is the community organizing program through the IAF that has given us access to see how we can affect change for thousands and thousands of people by actually having powerful conversations with major banks, major players in the financial world, whom seem sometimes like they are just deaf to all our concerns. But Voice, and this community as part of it, has made a huge difference in getting them to respond to the tune of millions and millions of dollars. And that takes you from a sense of powerlessness to a sense of possibility. But I want to recognize Martin Trimble, because he is something of a mentor to me in sometimes feeling like churches don't recognize their power and are just around to kind of be social institutions and help be caring, which is an important thing, but we neglect to think of what an important segment we are of the public. And Martin helps to remind me of that, because he is probably the best person at articulating how power works and how we are a part of it. And he has given me tremendous hope watching him work, and hope not only for me but for churches and what we do to affect change in the larger world. So I want us to give a warm welcome to Martin Trimble.
What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? 3 years ago, begrudgingly, I left a state playoff soccer game where my daughter had just scored, but they lost, to drive to Manassas to go to what I thought was going to be a 30-person housing counseling workshop at First Baptist Church here in Manassas for families in Prince William County area that were going through foreclosure. I walked into First Baptist, and the sanctuary was jam-packed with 300 people, all of whom had been part of the 20,000 families in Prince William County who lost their homes in large part due to predatory loans that they got from banks like Countrywide Financial, WMC Mortgage, Bear Stearns, Long Beach, and others, who sold them mortgages on the basis of their hope to become homeowners, to carry out and fulfill the American dream. What they didn't know is that they were being given loans, many of which were structured to fail. Immigrants in this county, many of them Spanish-speaking, were sold loans by mortgage brokers representing those companies who came to their homes, spoke to them in Spanish, sold them the loan in Spanish, told them that it was a variable rate interest loan, so that if interest rates fell, their mortgage payments would go down. And then when they went to the title company to sign for their loan, that broker wasn't there. Only a representative of the mortgage company who was English, who spoke English, and all the documents were in English, and they were told, sign now or you'll lose your house. You'll lose your loan. And what they did is they signed a document for a variable rate loan that had an interest rate floor of 8% and no ceiling. And that was amortized then over 50 years with a balloon payment at 30 years, which meant Annabelle, when she came to pay her loan off 30 years later, would still owe two-thirds of what she originally borrowed. We heard hundreds of stories like that day. And in the face of that despair, that overwhelming injustice, voice leaders like Mandy Goheen and your former pastor, Reverend Nancy McDonald Ladd, Reverend Ellis from Mount Olive Baptist Church, Reverend Keith from First Baptist, had a decision to make. In the face of that despair, will we act or will we retreat? And what they understood that is that they had agency if they organized the power that was necessary to make change. And they had overcome their own fear and their own ambivalence about power, because they understood that power is neither good nor bad. It's how you use it that makes it good or bad. And they understood that there are two worlds that we live in. The world as it should be, which is the world of our religious values, the values of equity and fairness that the Unitarian Universalist congregations stand up for so admirably in our society. But then there's the world as it is, the world of our economic lives and our political lives, the world dominated by the Jeff Immelts of the world, the CEO of GE, which is the owner of WMC Mortgage, that perpetrated the systematic stripping of equity from families here in Prince William County, many of whom had to go live in the Cloverleaf at the exit of I-95 there at Dale City because they couldn't afford a rental apartment in this community. And in the face of that overwhelming power, these leaders, you, members of this congregation, understood that if you organized the two forms of power, people acting consistently and persistently, and money, you could take on some of the most powerful financial institutions in the country. And so, supported by the Sisters of St. Francis and other religious denominations that owned shares in Bank of America, Reverend Ellis and I, supported by Voice sister organizations in North Carolina, confronted the CEO of Bank of America, Brian Moynihan, at his annual meeting. 15 feet from him, Reverend Ellis challenged him to make right what he had destroyed in Prince William County, particularly Georgetown South, less than a mile from here, where over 35% of the 800 homes went into foreclosure. Today, from that organizing, Voice leaders have met face to face and gotten commitments from Jeff Immelt, the CEO of GE, Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America, and Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase. They've reduced principal and provided debt reduction to over 1,000 families in Prince William County that totals over $100 million. There's now $1.6 million of money over the next 4 years that those banks will be paying to support housing counselors in this county. And we have gotten them to commit to create a $25 million fund that will help us acquire and rehabilitate blighted and abandoned properties in Iron Gate, Georgetown South, Bristow Station, Dale City, and others that are dragging down the quality of life in these neighborhoods and will allow us to buy and rehabilitate those homes and turn them into affordable housing. You all made that happen because you embraced the concept of power. You weren't afraid of it because you understand what it is. It is the capacity to act. It comes from the Spanish word poder, which means to be able. And you cannot bend the world towards justice. You cannot act on the important and essential values of Unitarianism if you do not have power. And you cannot be a light in the world unless you get into the world as it is, build some power, get sullied up a little bit, right? And make change. So we invite you to join us to make change. Organize in your workplace, in your kids' schools, in your own neighborhoods, in healthcare institutions, wherever you find yourself, where you want to make change. Because I think Adrienne Rich, the former poet laureate of the United States and Baltimore native, said it best in her beautiful poem, Dreams Before Waking. What would it mean to live in a city whose people were changing each other's despair into hope? You yourself must change it. What would it feel like to know your country was changing? You yourself must change it. Though your life felt arduous, new, and unmapped, and strange, what would it mean to stand on the first page of the end of despair? Mark my words. If we get a New Orleans marching band in Georgetown South, we will have created the first page of the end of despair. Thank you.
See? Do you see why I have found excitement again? Why I've found hope again? Why I've found the sense of potential and power in these communities? In a couple seconds, I'm going to give you a chance to respond, because you are where the power is. So I want to hear a little bit about your stories, what you think about power, what you think this congregation can do. Where do we become able? But I want to follow Martin's reflection with a reflection of my own. And it happened at the same time that he was coming down here to tour Georgetown South, when Reverend Nancy and Pastor Keith Savage were talking about what can we do in response to this. And it was around 2008, right when the crisis in our economy was being hit. And I was having a separate kind of conversation with the congregation that I was serving in Monterey, California, a fairly affluent congregation. And the conversation that I was having was because a few weeks prior, they had heard me made a comment when I was talking about why I wanted to be a Unitarian minister, why it was so important for me to have a community of ministry. And the response that I had given a couple weeks ago was because I want power. And they did not like that answer. And for a number of people, it was an affirmation of all of their suspicions, all of their doubts, all of their worries about why I was in the game, because I was just looking for attention. I was looking to get accolades. I was looking for power to be given to me so I could control other people. And so we called together a conversation so I could explain that the power that I want is to find a way beyond feeling like a lone voice crying in the wilderness. Because what I was crying about were the lives of people who I loved that were being trampled, whose rights were being denied. Gay and lesbian friends, immigrants from the neighborhood that I grew up in were being cast out. People who were in need of reassurance that women's rights and especially reproductive rights would be guaranteed. All of these were particular issues that were on the legislative chopping block, and people were scared, and I was scared with them. And I wanted some power to bring into those conversations at a larger level. And they understood that. And then I followed it up with something. Because at that moment in our history in Monterey County, we were wrestling with Prop 8. Did you hear about Prop 8 over here? Prop 8 was the marriage equality issue in California, which eventually passed, but it failed first several times. And the interesting thing is that there was a movement of conservative people to put before the Monterey City Council a piece of legislation which would have advocated their support for Proposition 8, which would have banned marriage equality. And so that was currently being discussed by the Monterey City Council. And I asked my people, my community, these people who helped give me the feeling that I was part of some power, I asked them, what would it be like if, as they were discussing this in the chambers of Monterey City Council, somebody stood up feeling concerned, knowing that this legislation was on the table and it might very well pass, and in their concern raised a point of urgency with their voice wavering, say, if we pass this, don't you think we ought to stop and consider what the Unitarians might think? And they did what you just did. They laughed. And like then, like now, it broke my heart to think that Unitarians coming together to effect change and wanting to have influence about something so important might seem so incredulous as to be funny. I hope it's not funny, because what these people that I love are facing is not funny. And we can be in that conversation if we raise ourselves to that place.